On This Week in Enterprise Tech, Cisco and VMware sharpen their SDN knives. We talk a little bit about how Google has cut their power consumption in their data centers without changing anything. And LiveSift, future of online engagement. Quiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Enterprise Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twyatt. This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 95, recorded June 16, 2014. LiveSift Online Engagement. This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by TechServe, the world's largest independent Apple retailer and professional services provider. Go to techserve.com/quiet-7sins to get access to the free ebook on the 7 deadly sins of iPad deployment. And by RingCentral. The cloud-based phone system we use just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs and RingCentral starts at under $25 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone and get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/TWIT and receive a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show all about enterprise technology and the people who make the world go round. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballas here, the digital Jesuit, your guide to all things in the enterprise. And I'm joined by my good friends and co-hosts, starting with Mr. Brian Chi, the director of the Advanced Network Computing Laboratory in Honolulu, Hawaii. Brian, how are things in the beautiful state of Hawaii?
It's all fine and dandy, and I'm still continuing to play with open source spectrometers, and my 3D printer is a busy.
You get all the fun jobs. Speaking of people with fun jobs, coming back from some extensive travels is Mr. Curtis Franklin. What are you doing these days? It's no longer Information Week. It's no longer Enterprise Efficiency. I saw the announcement. You're now conglomerated into the one big enterprise of Monolith?
Something like that. Yeah, we've joined the Information Week team. I am acting as executive producer for radio at Information Week, network computing, and dark reading, among several others. So getting a chance to do a lot of radio and work with a lot of great people. Some of them I've known for 20 years. Some of them are new, but having a good time with everyone.
And I've noticed that we've got a different angle on you. We seem to be looking at a different part of the room. But is there something new about you?
I actually went to a stand-up desk. I've been using a higher desk than normal for a long time. I've got an old postmaster's desk that my dad provided to me. I normally use it with a drafting stool, but decided to take a drafting board, put it on backwards, which raises everything to the point that I can use it as a stand-up desk. So I'm doing the stand-up desk thing and so far really enjoying it. I can't say that I've lost much weight, but I do find that I'm spending much less time sitting during the course of the day.
I've heard that stand-up desk can remove as much as 5 pounds a week. I'm going to get started on that. But before we get to that, let's jump straight in to the enterprise blips. Starting with AT&T has made a super-duper triple-dog-dare promise to the FCC that they'll be good to the consumers if they get approved for the acquisition of DirecTV. AT&T has appealed to the FCC for approval of their bid to acquire satellite television and internet company DirecTV for $49 billion. AT&T argues that the deal will allow them to better compete with a potential Comcast-Time Warner merger and hints that if allowed to complete the purchase, consumers could see a downward pressure on prices, though they didn't actually say that they would charge less or deliver more. In completely unrelated news, AT&T arguing to the FCC that they need to create a mega telco could possibly help the consumers, but probably not giant to compete with another potential mega telco could possibly help the consumers, but probably not giant is probably one of the best arguments ever for the FCC not to allow any mega telco giants.
In the meantime, Tesla has announced, this is coming to us from Extreme Tech, that they're going to share their supercharger network with other electric car makers. Tesla announced its plans for a supercharger network. One of the questions raised about the platform was whether we were moving towards a manufacturer-exclusive scenario in which individual companies would have their own fueling stations. This would probably be bad for consumers. One of the advantages to the modern fuel system is that you don't have to look for Ford, Chevy, or Toyota-specific gas stations to pump up a vehicle. Now the company's CEO, Elon Musk, has said that Tesla will open up its supercharging technology to help create a universal standard for all modern cars. You might soon be able to recharge your Chevy Volt or Nissan Leaf at a Tesla supercharging station in the near future.
Curtis, you're muted.
Speaking of supercharging, we've had a supercharged release of patent information courtesy of the Chinese government. Microsoft has been licensing access to parts of its patent portfolio for several years now, offering device makers protection from litigation related to Android and Chrome OS. Now, while Microsoft boasts that more than 70% of Android phones sold in the U.S. are covered by licensing agreements, the company has never listed exactly which patents are infringed by Android. Instead, we had to wait on that information coming from China's Ministry of Commerce, MOFCOM, I'll let you provide your own pronunciation, because it's now revealed a list of more than 300 patents and applications held by Microsoft that formed the Chinese approval of the recent Nokia deal.
Finally, Microsoft updates their online EULA to provide no snooping. Take a look at the most recent Microsoft Services Agreement, and you'll see that they've updated the privacy language to put customers at ease about snooping. Updated on June 11th and effective on July 31st, the new agreement specifically forbids Redmond from using any data from Microsoft-hosted email, video chat, voicemail, documents, photos, or other personal files to target you with advertising. Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about the future of networking. But before that, I thought it might be a good time to bring in the first sponsor of the Twilight Riot. And of course, that's TechServe. Now, we talk a lot about Apple products, but not always in the best light. Let's be honest. Even though they've made a big splash in BYOD, coming in the backside through tablets and mobile devices, not enough people give them credit for being part of today's enterprise strategy, which is why we're glad to have TechServe as a partner on This Week in Enterprise Tech. Businesses keep coming up with creative ways to service their customers, increase productivity among employees, and make more money with the same resources, all by using the iPad. For example, the Culinary Institute of America equipped students, faculty, and chefs with the iPad, empowering them to do away with heavy and unwieldy textbooks and streamline the learning process. A major cable service provider in the Northeast gave its field technicians, who are the public face of the company, iPads that had been configured to provide better customer service. And retail companies have enhanced their in-store customer experience by using the iPad, not just as a point-of-sale device, but also as a spot where customers can learn about sales, special offers, and upcoming events. These clients and more have turned to TechServe, the country's largest Apple reseller that sells, supports, and manages the largest iPad deployments in the world to manage their iPad projects. If you're considering adding iPads to your business, why not ensure the company's the project's success with an experienced partner? TechServe assists businesses of all sizes to deploy Apple solutions, as well as solutions from Avid, Adobe, and so much more throughout the United States. No matter if you've started deploying iPads already or are just getting started, TechServe is the perfect partner for you. Right now, TechServe is offering a complimentary download just for Twilight listeners who are deploying iPads or who are interested in learning more about doing so. To get it, go to TechServe.com/Twilight-7sins to get access to the 7 deadly sins of iPad deployment and see the common pitfalls that throw companies for a loop during their iPad projects. This complimentary download is available right now just for Twilight listeners at TechServe.com/Twilight-7sins. And we thank TechServe for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Cheever, Curtis, let's talk a little bit about the future of the SDN data center. We've got a story here from Network World all about some giants in the field who are starting to diverge in how they approach software-defined networking. Now, the software-designed data center is inevitable. There are just simply too many advantages to being able to dynamically allocate network resources and services for applications on demand. Now, compared to the traditional data center, the software-defined data center is more agile, more secure, because security is defined by application rather than around the required services or equipment, and more scalable than a traditional data center. Now, two in the big of the biggest players in the field are Cisco and VMware. Now, though they are partners on paper, they have different ways of viewing what a data center of the future will look like, and now they're making it known to the world. Now, let's sum up. The VMware approach goes something like this. It centers around their NSX line. It takes network control away from the hardware and abstracts it to the for the application. Now, the virtual network hardware is decoupled from the physical infrastructure, and the application sees all the resources it needs through the NSX layer, which is then connected to the points of abstraction in the physical hardware. The Cisco approach is a little different. The key to the Cisco approach is their ACI, the application-centric infrastructure. Rather than abstracting the hardware, in other words, making it so that you could have multiple copies of the same hardware to share time and resources, the Cisco approach lets you see all the components, physical and virtual. So you're fully aware of what's running in your network at any given time, and it gives you the ability to see what could impact performance. Now, Chibert, I want to ask you first, is Microsoft left out here? I mean, we're talking about VMware and we're talking about Cisco, but one of the big players that's not mentioned is Microsoft, and they've made a play for the SDN data center as well.
Yeah, Microsoft actually kind of look at it as a middle ground. It actually provides all of the above, and they're actually working very hard with equipment manufacturers to have Microsoft SDN certified hardware. So you should be able to get it with your popular operating system to be able to go and integrate your services directly into the hardware. So you get the best of what VMware is talking about, and you also get the best of what Cisco's talking about. My big question is Microsoft too late to the game, or is being the dominant server operating system in the data center going to give them an advantage, because now it's going to be built into every copy of Windows Server?
I like that. I like that approach. Let me go over to you, Curtis, because we see the two different approaches here. What VMware wants is they want you to not care about the hardware at all. They want you just to see the hardware abstraction layer, to say, look, it doesn't matter what kind of servers, what kind of switches you run in your data center. All you need to see is the layer that we put over the top of it, and now you can build your applications. Cisco, of course, since they're a hardware company, wants you to be able to see the hardware so that you know where your bottlenecks are, where your performance benefits are, what resources you do and do not have. Why do you think we see now that these two former partners seem to be diverging? Why are they offering very different views on what an SDN data center of the future will look like?
Well, I think it all boils down to the notion of owning the customer. You know, who really wants to be the company that controls the direction in which their customer is going to take their network infrastructure? You very correctly point out that Cisco truly wants all of their customers running Cisco as much as possible. I mean, they would love it if every company that worked with them was Cisco from end to end. VMware, on the other hand, as you pointed out, has hardware partners. What they care about is the software layer, and it's to their benefit to have that software running on as many different pieces of hardware as possible from as many different vendors, because that gives them more opportunity to be sold to the ultimate customer. You know, we can talk about, and they do, the technology advantages, the performance advantages, ultimately how well each of them plays with standards, but what it all comes down to is which one is going to get to control how you buy hardware and software for the next 5 to 15 years in your network. Chibert was absolutely right. Microsoft is lurking back there, and frankly, they want to have a healthy cloud component in all of this. Their software, they're the cloud. So it's three different options, three different visions for a direction for your network. And unfortunately for the enterprise, the three don't play well together. So if people are going to start realizing the advantages of SDN, they really are being forced to make a decision pretty early about what their philosophy of software-defined networking looks like.
Achievert Max1234 in the chat room has a good point, which is he's saying, well, of course, this is what Cisco wants, because NSX says that networking is now irrelevant. The hardware doesn't matter. Now, here's the thing, though. The promise of the SDN was specifically that the hardware didn't matter, right? You could build your applications based on best solutions rather than the best hardware. And yeah, that the abstraction layer was always part of a proper SDN. So how is Cisco selling their solution saying, no, it's better that you can also see the hardware layer? I mean, to me, it sounds as if Cisco is saying, we want you to have the benefits of SDN, but we still want you to be tied to our hardware.
It's follow the dollars. You know, I'm sorry. Cisco is a marketing organization, and they are going to try and make sure that they sell as much Cisco-branded hardware as possible. So, of course, they're going to try and tell people that their SDN solution that has hardware-specific functionality is, of course, better. I happen to be very fond of not having to know what hardware is underneath it. I want to be able to go and have a heterogeneous network, not a homogeneous network. And I think Microsoft's got a very, very good approach, especially because they are working with the open networking people, you know, OpenStack, open this, open that. And while it is not open source yet, they are opening a heck of a lot of their APIs to try and play catch up. And I think they're doing a pretty good job. I admit I'm a kind of a Microsoft fanboy, but I like their non-hardware specific solutions.
Now we've got Alex in the chat room who says, well, maybe we should push for an open standard for SDN. Gee, but I want to throw that back at you. When I think of SDN, I think of the early experiments that we were doing with Interop and with the guys from Stanford with OpenFlow, putting hacking switches that weren't originally SDN equipped switches to put OpenFlow in them to enable SDN. Since then, every manufacturer has come out with a slightly differentiated version of SDN running on the OpenFlow framework, and none of them talk to one another. Is it time for the IT community to say, look, just use one standard? As you said, I don't want to care about what's in my network. I want to have my Cisco switches next to my Avaya switches, next to my Juniper switches, and they should all be able to do SDN.
Well, I'd like to call out to Jabba. Jabba does have a good point. If I buy Cisco, I know it's going to work together because Cisco spends the time and energy to make sure it all works. But I also like the ability to not have to do a forklift upgrade. And I'm not sure how many shops are out there that are 100% Cisco. They might, but I haven't seen too many of them. I like not having to care what's underneath it. I like open standards, but I will admit the OpenFlow guys need to get their act together, just like the Linux community has to get their act together. When you have too many opinions, too many cooks in the kitchen, you're not going to get a single recipe. You're going to get lots of recipes. And I want, you know, one or two recipes. I want to be able to go and trust that my SDN solution is going to work with what I have in my shop now, because I don't have the money for a forklift upgrade.
Got it. Actually, I want to throw that over to you, Curtis. You get the last thought on this story. And Cheebert and Jabba brought up something very important, which is Cisco's going back to their old strategy of no one ever got fired for buying Cisco. Are they trying to use the same strategy? Are they trying to carry it over to the SDN world saying, yeah, our solution may be a little bit different, but we believe that just because we've got the name and because people trust us, they'll continue to buy our approach because, hey, we're Cisco.
Well, in many ways, this gets back to the old days of FUD, because let's look at it. As you point out, no one ever got fired for buying Cisco. Here they're saying that you can get all of the benefits of SDN. You get reliability. You get a solution that's going to work well together. And, oh, by the way, you get something that a lot of managers still talk about, and that is one throat to choke. In other words, one vendor you can go to if things go wrong and say, fix this or there will be consequences. Now, the open source folks offer a lot of advantages, But if you look at the four that Cisco can sell today, there are several of those, especially the one throat to choke and the reliability, where the OpenStack people really have provided to Cisco a tool to be used against them. I absolutely agree with my friend Brian that if they're going to compete, if they're going to be a major factor in SDN, they have to get past that, and they have to do it pretty darn quickly. If they don't, we're going to be living in a Cisco world for a long, long time to come.
I actually want to use that as the show title. We're going to be living in a Cisco world. But let's step away from services for a bit and go back to one of my favorite topics, hardware, specifically about what Google is doing with their hardware. We've got a story here from the Register talking about how Google and Stanford have figured out how to slash DC power usage without replacing any hardware. Now, Google, working with Stanford researchers on a joint project entitled Pegasus, have figured out a way to slice as much as 20% off the power consumption of their existing data center network. And the best part is they can do it without replacing a single piece of hardware. Now, we all know that most of our computers spend the vast majority of their time at idle. We just aren't feeding instructions fast enough for them to do anything, even 5% of the time. Modern CPUs can put themselves to sleep into a low power state so that they don't suck up power when they're not just sitting there counting sheep. Now, most servers go one step further, and they only turn on clusters when their processing power is required. This is what we've seen in some dynamic data centers where you turn on more and more racks as more and more processing power is required, and you shift the applications around so that you only use up the servers that can handle the load. However, Google has figured out that in the process of powering up those racks, of the process of turning on those clusters, it requires you to move tens of gigabytes in and out of memory millions of times a minute, which was expensive and inefficient. They also figured out that by turning off individual cores, they weren't really saving that much power, because the nature of Google's massively parallel search engine guarantees that just enough queries would be routed to each core to keep them on, but at a 1% or less utilization. So if they're not going to be turning these clusters on and off, if they're not going to be turning the cores on and off, what is there to do? Well, they figured out that instead of turning on clusters and cores, they were just going to turn the power down. Pegasus doesn't just throttle the CPU power up and down when it's busy or idle, but it reaches into each CPU core itself and tweaks power consumption in 0.125 watt increments to provide each cluster with only as much computing power as is required to satisfy the service level objective. Chibert, I want to throw this at you first. This is actually something that we've been trying to do for a long time, but some very smart people at some very big companies haven't been able to figure out a way to do it. Here are Google and Stanford stepping up, offering Project Pegasus and saying, look, we can make it so that each CPU is only pulling the amount of power it needs to complete the task at hand, rather than shutting it off entirely. This is kind of a game changer, right?
Well, it's a game changer that is about time. You know, Intel and AMD have had those hooks in their CPUs for quite a while. In fact, I remember seeing them back in the Woodbridge chips, if I remember right. But this is a case where the CPUs have outstripped the software capabilities, and we're playing catch up. So Stanford, good at you. I love the concept. And this is something that would be really cool, especially in high performance computing. Because, yeah, we've got the same problem. When you start having to move around a lot of state information between CPUs, that does cost energy, that does cost equipment, that does cost overhead. So being able to crank down the power button is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like about this concept is that the clusters stay active, which means, as you said, they don't have to transfer their in-state memory between nodes, which actually also reduces the amount of chances for some sort of corruption. We saw that with cluster movement in the early Netflix outages, where that the very act of powering things up and down can introduce some bad side effects. But they were able to cut their power usage 10 to 20% in real-world usage. This was not in a lab. This is actually in one of their data centers. And they were able to do it without changing out a single piece of gear. Curtis, I got to ask you, how long before other vendors copy this idea? I mean, 10 to 20% is a ridiculous number when you consider how much power these data centers pull in.
Well, you've got to believe that the other vendors have their engineers hard at work figuring out exactly what Google's done. I mean, in very real terms, this is the equivalent of what they've done in automobiles when they take a V8 and shut down some of the cylinders as you're going down the highway and need less horsepower to maintain speed. They've figured out how to cut off the CPU, cut out the cylinder, bring it back up without blowing up the head or popping a head gasket the way that some of the early experiments did in automotive engineering. I think it's a great thing, and I think we're going to see this kind of technology going to a lot of different places. I mean, think about it. We're talking about data centers now, and that's massive. But what could something like this do for multi-core laptop machines? What could it do for multi-core phones, for multi-core tablets? All of these places where the name of the game is minimizing energy consumption. This is one of those things that Google can introduce that we're not going to call it a game changer, but it certainly does enhance the way the game is played for an awful lot of people.
Absolutely. Oh, wait, I'm getting a bulletin. Yep, I've got Leo on the line, and he says that the U.S. has just scored a goal in the first minute of their game versus Ghana. And now back to your regularly scheduled enterprise news. Now, Chibert, I want to throw this over to you really quickly, because one of the trends that we've been seeing in the data center, as and we've seen this over the last 3 years, is the push to ARM processors. There's been all this buzz about how servers were just going to use a lot of low-powered ARM processors. You were going to save a lot of power, so it didn't matter that you didn't get a whole lot of horsepower out of each chip. This solution uses the RAPL, that's the running average power limit capability that's built into the higher horsepower, higher power chips to give them better efficiency than even the lower powered ARM chips. Is this kind of a death knell to the people who are saying, I'm going to see an ARM chip in my server?
Don't know. I think it's going to be a wait and see. You know, only having one example is cool, but having it in general release is what makes the difference. So when it becomes general release, that's when I'm going to jump up and down and start, you know, throwing a party. And go Team USA.
Go Team USA. Now, when we come back, we're going to be engaging a special guest who's going to tell us a little bit about live engagement. Now, we all know that we like to talk to people on the internet, but do you know when they're getting your message? We'll tell you all about it when we come back. But first, we want to thank the second sponsor of the Twilight Riot. And of course, it's got to be RingCentral. You know them, you love them, because they're part of Twit. Now, when Leo built the studio, he decided to do as much as he could in the cloud. We wanted to show the people that living in the cloud, doing business in the cloud, was really how the future was going to be. So all of our calendaring is in the cloud. All of our document sharing is in the cloud. Our email, even our voicemail, is all stored in the cloud. And well, that's just the way it's going to be. That's why when our IT guy, Russell, came to us and told us that we could have a full-featured PBX, a phone system without any bulky PBX hardware in the basement, well, it was a no-brainer. We love RingCentral. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain, and now RingCentral has launched Meetings. So in addition to all that we love about RingCentral, receiving our voicemails through our email, sending and receiving fax messages from our smartphones, the auto receptionist who greets our callers and announces employees and department extensions, now with Meetings, we can host face-to-face meetings in high definition, in real time, and share desktop or documents with anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any device. Meetings makes RingCentral the single best business solution on the market today. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to see if RingCentral can do for you what it's done for Twit. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing under $25 a month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. They have a special offer for my listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number, designated for my listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, just in case you're looking at the goal, 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank RingCentral for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. We welcome to the show a special guest who's going to tell us all about live public engagement, Mr. Alex Burgo from LiveSift. Alex, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is super fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, Alex, could you tell us a little bit about what LiveSift is?
Yeah, LiveSift is an online software as a service, engages audiences and meeting participants, meetings of all sizes. We're trying to basically democratize the conversation. A lot of times in meetings and at events, one or two or a few people will talk, but then there's a lot of brains that are not being utilized properly in those meetings and events, and we're trying to fix that problem.
Okay, now let's break this down, because I hear a lot of buzzwords. I hear a lot of good ideas. The idea of using idle processing power, using idle brains. That's all great, but this has been tried, right? I mean, this is something that people have tried to do in every business before the internet, before computers. The idea of involving more of the people who you're supposed to be communicating with you. What defines a good approach? I'm not talking just about LiveSift. I'm talking about in this idea of event participation. What are the best practices?
Well, I think there's a lot of companies doing similar things in the same area. And obviously, LiveSift isn't just the one player. I think it's giving people the opportunity to participate. I think most people actually want to participate. That is why there's a chat here. People are participating. You guys are giving them responses and looking at the content, and you're using it in your broadcast. I think this is exactly the approach that is needed to sort of take advantage of users and sometimes idle listeners.
Yeah. Okay. Now let me ask you this: what you talk about, this participation, it's sort of was the promise of the internet, the idea of synchronous communication. Everyone can participate in the conversation. Everyone can submit their ideas. Everyone can offer their opinion. But we have seen, and I'm even going to point out our own chat room, sometimes that becomes very difficult. Communication isn't always best when it's completely synchronous. So we've turned to sort of a moderated approach. What does LiveSift do to make sure that I'm going to call it the noise level stays at a usable level?
Right. So, in general, I think a chat room is a very unstructured conversation, which can be good for very creative approaches. The problem is, of course, the moderation part, that you need to moderate it. What we are trying to do, and some other companies, are basically to keep everybody on the same page. I also must say, though, that the internet, it was the promise, but the implementation wasn't quite there. I think technologies right now are maturing in the way that it becomes asynchronous. Now that most devices can do WebSockets, we actually have a true synchronous and real-time communication with the devices that exist all around that we carry around. Now the processing power is good enough for us to all sort of take advantage of those connections. The networks are being built out. And so this is sort of the slow part of a fast-moving internet, is that it just takes time to mature the technologies. And I think right now is that time.
Okay, actually, I like that. I remember back to the early days of the BBSs, you know, when I was dialing in with my 24 baud modem or even my 300 baud modem on an acoustic coupler. Yeah. That was actually one of the promises, right? I mean, the promise of, oh, wow, we can have real-time communications. It never really worked out, and I think it really was a limitation of the technology. As you say, maybe the technology is now here. Maybe we have enough speed to engage in real time. I want to bring one of our other hosts into the show. Chibert, you have a lot of experience in an educational setting. In educational settings, I know have really enjoyed using those clicker systems. I know they use them at one of our universities here, Georgetown, to great effect. To encourage proper engagement. What has been your experience of these systems?
Well, like you, the University of Hawaii has been using clicker systems for quite a while. They're great. The clicker hub, I guess you would call it, is mounted in a general purpose classroom, but the students are forced to buy the clickers. And while there has been some very deep pocket discounts on those, Most of them are infrared based. So that means if you've got an especially tall person in front of you, you've got to kind of crane your neck and try and shoot between the heads. But in the meantime, I've got a smartphone in my pocket. Why couldn't we use that? And that's why I got so excited. The Honolulu Mini Maker Faire people have actually used this because we have a bunch of people all over the state all working on building a Maker Faire. So we're able to build bullet points, rearrange bullet points, take polls within our planning members very, very quickly without having to have any kind of proprietary equipment. And I think that's what makes this so exciting. No more proprietary equipment. It's all cloud.
All cloud. I like that. Okay, let's use that. Alex, let me go back to you. Could you describe what the perfect engagement system would look like for you? Let's start with that academic environment. Let's say I have a classroom, 30 students. What would it look like? What would the professor have to do beforehand? How would he engage his students? What information could he get from that engagement system?
Right. So I've been teaching at UH actually for about 5 years before this. And so I actually have some experience. I never forced my students to buy the clickers, though. I think the most important part for any educator is to plan ahead. I think going through a book in class makes no sense. Students are smart. They pay a lot of money to be there. The classroom experience should be additional value to what they can read in a book. And so to me, it's about providing some information, facilitating a learning, and then let the students participate in that learning experience. I really think that the whole point is that an educator should go where the students need him or her to go. And so by having feedback readily available, I think you can facilitate a better learning situation. And it also takes care of some of the points where some of the students don't want to actually speak up in class. There are some extroverts, but there is a lot of introverts in classrooms. And I think technologies actually can facilitate them also being able to participate on a whole new level.
Okay. All right. So, but let's get back to the question. I understand what you're setting up. What would they do? I mean, would you use polls? And again, not just the LiveSift software.
Yeah.
How would you want to change your classroom environment to engage the online engagement participation paradigm?
Well, first of all, I think one of the things you can do is you can poll students just to make sure that they're on the same page as you. You don't have to actually guess to what extent they understand what's going on. I think the learning experience is also... When you're looking in a group, there's a lot of creative ideas. So you can start out with a brainstorm. You can start sort of going really wide. You have a ton of different ideas. You can sort of let the students then use different tools to sort of sift through the ideas and sort of simmer it down to more tangible goals and processes. I think the idea is to actually use the tools that are available and put them into frameworks for learning and sort of methods that are already being used, like software development methods. I mean, there are systems there. They're just not being used in the right way, I think.
All right. Curtis, I want to throw this over to you. When we talk about engagement systems, I honestly, I'm always going to default to an educational setting because that's where my home is. That's what I do most of the time. But this kind of a solution does scale up, right? I mean, there's always enterprises, there's always businesses that are looking for a better way to engage their participants, their audience, their customers online, and to get some sort of feedback from that audience.
Oh, absolutely. And it's worth noting that these days, the name of the game has become engagement among advertisers, among the companies that are trying to reach their customers. You know, we've gone through the period where we worried about impressions, where we worried about click-through, where we worried about a lot of things. Now people are just entranced by the notion of engagement, getting the consumer, getting the customer interested enough in what you're doing that they will talk back to you, that they'll talk to their colleagues about your products or services, that they will somehow do more than be passive recipients, that they'll actually engage with you. And so a system like this that provides a mechanism for engagement and a mechanism that can be measured for engagement is some the sort of thing that an awful lot of CMOs, chief marketing officers, are going to be fascinated by and eager to try.
Alex, I'd like to welcome you to our chat room. We've got Web3226, who is going to represent the voice of cynicism a little bit. He says, look, teacher units would fight this technology tooth and nail because it would make their job harder. If, as you say, they would just take the traditional methods of teaching, the traditional methods of imparting information and restructure them so that they could be properly used in an online engagement system, is he right? I mean, does this just make their job harder without any discernible return on investment?
I think it depends on what the goal of the educator is, really. If you want to just go through the same slides you've done for 20 years, then fine, don't use technologies. But I think it's more rewarding for everybody, really, if you get an engaged classroom. I mean, I've been in class. I don't have the most engaging voice, but my goodness, it's really hard to lecture when there's absolutely no engagement with the students. But it's so much fun when they actually give you feedback. And so I think it's rewarding for everyone. I can't really see a whole union fight technology like that. I mean, iClicker is already a current technology. The people fighting that is the students because it's an added expense to them.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I could see people being cynical because, as you say, there are teachers who believe that PowerPoint is the height of technology use in a classroom. And I think we've all suffered a little bit from PowerPoint poisoning, whether it be in a classroom or in a business meeting. And the idea that technology can be used for more than just throwing up a couple of graphics on screen or reading off of a large television, well, that's just a little bit different. When we come back, Alex, can I ask you to actually go through your company's software to show off an example of this new paradigm of online engagement?
Okay, yeah, will do, definitely.
All right, well, so we'll get set up for that. But before we do that, I want to take some time to talk about the third sponsor of this episode of TWiET, and that is, of course, Prosper. Now, what if I told you that in 72 hours you could have $35,000 to cover your needs? What would you do with that money? Would you pay off your high-rate credit cards? Would you start a business? Would you finally do those home improvements that you've been putting off year after year? Well, what if I told you that by filling out an easy online application and providing a few details, you could see a rate online instantly without ever stepping foot in a bank? Well, folks, that's not fantasy. That's Prosper. Prosper is an innovative peer-to-peer lending process, Silicon Valley's answer to a more modern community-based personal loan. There are no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates, and yes, you'll never set foot in a bank. Prosper offers low fixed rates, unsecured personal loans, which means no collateral is required, and has multi-year terms available. Prosper has more than 2 million members, lenders, and borrowers, and over $1 billion in funded loans. Folks, this is peer-to-peer lending. We've heard of programs like this, usually in the news about a developing country or as microloans, but it's time that peer-to-peer made it into our financial vocabulary. Prosper connects people who need money with those who have it to loan. It's really that simple. Just go to prosper.com/twit to check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. Here's what we'd like you to do. For a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for our viewers. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days and receive a $50 Amazon.com gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com is not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit prosper.com/twit. And we thank Prosper for their support of this week in Enterprise Tech. Back with Alex Burgo from LiveShift. Alex, show us how this works.
Okay, so I think I'm sharing a screen. This is the big screen. We basically split up our software in three components. You have a meeting facilitator that have a very simple input screen. I mean, I'm not sure if I could share that right now, but I'm sharing the big screen. This is what everybody sees. And so I can see people logging in right now. So if people go to use your smartphone browser or whatever internet-enabled device, as long as it's not Internet Explorer 8 or older, I guess, go to lifesift.com and enter the event code tweet. And so what I have in front of me is basically a plan for what we're going to go through. I have an agenda, and then I can facilitate it. Once I start moving through the agenda, it follows, everybody follows the same sort of path through the software. So the idea is to keep everybody on the same page.
As the presenter, I have the ability to sort of like force the page turn, so to keep everyone on the same page.
Yes, exactly.
I like that.
So,
So in this scenario, let's say you're using this for a presentation. You're having everyone in the presentation log onto their mobile device, go to that site, and now you can control what kind of engagement, what kind of participation they could have in your presentation.
Right. So I'm going to start now a Q&A, and that's going to change everybody's devices and the big screen as well. So this is a tool we've used in a lot of different settings, especially at larger events. We had a congresswoman use it, and I'm sorry about now this sounds like a sales pitch, but the idea is to actually control the conversation a little bit. So instead of having a chat room where people can just yell out, write whatever, we actually can keep the conversation on the same track. So I pick the question and then I can talk around it.
Hold on, Alex. For our live audience, this is actually live right now. If you go to livesift.com and in the search bar, type in Twit, it will drop you into the session that Alex just created, and you could type in your questions.
Yeah. And so I see we have, people are signing in. I can see it's coming up. Questions are popping up on my side. We use this for a lot of live events, and the idea is to not have people, you know, write up questions before the session. Now you can actually type questions in as you come along. And so if you compare this to other settings where they have Q&A sessions where you have to actually write in a question beforehand, you can now write as you hear content. And in sessions, we had an event recently. We had out of 110 people in the audience, 90 people signed in because everybody nowadays have a smartphone, and we got about 70 questions for the panel. So I'm just going to pick a random question.
Can you show us what questions are coming in?
Yes. So all devices would need to support WebSockets, correct? Actually, no. So there's a fallback on the WebSockets. It'll fall back to REST operations. I've tested this with an iPhone that is old as can be. I mean, that phone barely can sustain running a browser, and it works fine. We have, you know, obviously there are certain snafus. We're still in beta, but we're working out the kinks as we run. But this is a really fun engagement, and people feel really rewarded when their question comes up. And I think an advantage is also that people that have events like this, now they get a sense of what everybody's thinking about. And you can actually take those questions, run it through the panel, and now you get content for later sessions. I think it's a great event. We also count up the questions coming in. So I can... there's another question here. No, that's not the one I wanted to see.
Chat, and we love you.
It's coming in so fast that it actually hits. Can we see the presenter side? I don't know. We have to switch the page around a little bit here. But yeah, sure. You can see. Give me 1 second here. We'll just switch around a little bit.
Yeah. So while you switch around, let me say, like, I was playing around with this interface before the show. And one of the things that I really liked about this was the ability to choose different modules. So this is a question and answer module, but they also have polls. They have multiple choice. And that's one of the cool things, that it could give you a graph, an instant graph, which I will say from experience in a presentation is one of the coolest things you can do when you have a question that goes with an auditorium full of people. And instantly you get feedback on what the different people in that auditorium have said. Actually, we saw this in a video game that one of our friends, Brian Brushwood, was playing, which showed you the choices of everyone else playing the game. It's that kind of instant feedback that I think people really like.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think we have some polls already set up. If you want, I can run one. Let me switch back to the. Then I'll just run the poll. So that's going to change everybody's phones and the devices, and now we keep everybody on the same page. We don't present any results back to the phones, because the whole idea for us is actually to keep engagement in the room. We want people to look up from their devices. We want to engage them using the devices they otherwise would check Facebook with, but we want to engage them, and we want them to keep interested in what's going on in the room. So that's what we're displaying on the big screen. We are working on implementing it for video conferencing so that it all sort of becomes part of a video conferencing setup.
Okay, Alex, I have to say, we've been using something like this called Straw Poll. I know the creator of Straw Poll. He's a great guy, but I kind of say this actually is better.
I know.
I'm going to piss off a lot of people saying that. But have you heard of Straw Poll?
No, actually, I have not. I wrote it down the moment you said it.
It does a lot of the same things. But yeah, that was a very cool module. Actually, what are some of the other questions that you've thrown up?
Okay, so there's a question about the virtualization war. I think people can sort of relate to that.
This was one of the things that I wrote up before.
So yeah. Let
me vote. Let me see what the audience says here. Oh,
this is very interesting, actually. So would Microsoft or VMware, just because they're sort of old hands in the game, win that war simply because they're just large players?
Actually, I thought Cisco would be running away with this. That's okay. That's also very chat room. I love you, my live viewers. You are the best. Let me bring in Chibert here. Chibert, this is actually really, really impressive. When you first pitched this presentation to me, I wasn't actually sure how we would approach it, but I could definitely see this being a better engagement system than what we've been using in the past. This is even better than chat room.
Well, the nice thing about it is you're keeping control. The one thing they always tell new teachers, don't let the class take control. You have to stay in control. And this is a tool that gets that immediate feedback, just like a chat room, but it allows you to keep control of it so that the audience doesn't run away with the class, which is a pretty big deal.
Now, Alex, we, of course, our chat room is awesome. We've got, who is it? Some of our people are saying, you know, it would be awesome if other people in the presentation had the ability to upvote, kind of like Reddit or Dig in its early days, upvote other people's questions so those go to the presenters. That would be another level of social interaction that maybe you could work in.
Right. So we've actually thought about that, and there is a solution out there for that. But the whole idea for us is actually to keep the attention in the room. So we have it on our development schedule, but we've sort of pushed it back a little bit because we're looking at other solutions for that exact thing. Some of which is more using machine learning and artificial intelligence to look at patterns in how people are actually posing questions. So that's kind of what we're thinking of pulling that. We really just don't want the audience to be too engaged on the devices. We want the whole attention to be in the room.
Okay, actually, let me ask you about that, because that's a really, really good point. You would need to be able to split the audience attention between the device that you want them to use to participate and actually paying attention to the speaker. How do you manage that? What would be the best practices for doing that?
Well, so first of all, I think people in events and meeting rooms are disengaged because they aren't listened to. And I think one of the ways that you get people's attention is to let them contribute. So I think that automatically increases the awareness of what's going on. We, on purpose, do not display results back on the screen. We have a boring holding screen, basically. We are going to use that screen for other things, but the idea is that we want the attention to be mainly up in the room. So once you put in your poll, you will look up to look at the results, and then you will start engaging with the room again. And that's the idea that we are talking about.
Max1234 wants another question. And actually, you have to be careful with chat room, because once they start demanding things, it can turn bad really, really quick. do we have anything left in those modules?
Yes,
I forgot if we filled that.
We have a ranking. So now you can actually rank in order of your favorite SDN vendors.
Oh, okay. I like
so
this.
So this is slightly different. This is usually we use it for a little bit smaller audiences, but this is something that we've used quite a lot in public events. So there's a big poll in Honolulu to make it all friendly, age-friendly city. And so we had about 100 participants first brainstorm over things and then rank important topics within different categories of making Honolulu an age-friendly city. This is very empowering. We did use this just yesterday for an event, and one of the feedback we got was that people actually felt powerful as they could influence the results. And so I think it's very interesting to me.
I have to say, I thought more of our people would be the non-home rolled open flow, but I guess, hey, the chat room has spoken. Okay, now, Alex, we are running out of time, so I thank you very much for this demonstration, because it's much easier to look at than it is for us to talk about the best practices. Obviously, this has a lot of use in the classroom. This is great for any sort of presentation, but it scales bigger than that, right? I mean, I've seen this sort of stuff used in stadiums. I've seen this sort of technology used to engage people in online web broadcasts. Where do you want to take LiveSift in, say, the next 5 years?
So the next 5 years, we actually want to revolutionize the meeting room, the business-to-business decision-making meeting rooms. But we are also looking at a separate market, which is the stadium. We're talking with stadiums and television stations right now. The first upcoming thing that we're doing is going into these public events and engagements where there's 100, some, maybe more participants. But in 5 years, and you know, sky's the limit. We're a growing company, and the good thing about the cloud is that the services are so available, so you can actually turn on a dime and move fast.
Fantastic. Chibert, I want to get your input into this, because obviously you are very involved in several IT arenas that could use this technology. This is going to become more the norm, right? I mean, we see a couple of feedback modules built into various communication platforms, but it seems more and more, if you want to get business, you're going to have some sort of built-in engagement software, right?
You bet. And what I really, really like about this is I can participate in this even if I'm on a cruddy 3G connection or even a 2G connect. Well, maybe not a 2G, but I can participate even when I'm on the road when I don't have enough bandwidth for video and say I'm listening to Twit on audio only. I can still vote and still make my voice heard. I think this is an amazing empowerment system, and I think I'm going to see some very, very interesting applications, and I just cannot wait to see this on the Jumbotron at the Honolulu Stadium.
Now, Curtis, I want to throw over to you. You've been relatively quiet over there. Where do you see this scaling? I mean, of course, we're talking about stadiums, we're talking about large gatherings, we're talking about enterprise, but do you see any other more nuanced uses of this kind of technology where you can get instant feedback, instant engagement with an audience you cannot see?
Oh, I certainly do. I mean, it ranges from things like those that I do. We do a lot of user engagement and reader engagement at the publications where I work, all the way up to some marketing things. I mean, imagine, if you will, where you've got a crowd gathering, whether it's, let's talk about a big sporting event, one of the big bowl games, for example, where all of a sudden you've got 90,000 people coming together. What a great time if you are a snack food provider to give free samples of a new flavor of, say, a tortilla chip or a soft drink or something like that. And then ask people, you know, engage them, use the Jumbotron, engage people in what they think. All of a sudden, you've got a 90,000-strong consumer panel there that you can use. The same could be true of any sort, any number of different consumer products. It's similar to the thing now. NASCAR has been doing this with some of their broadcasts where they get people to vote on which pit crew they think will be the best or which driver they think will win the race. But what if they could do that at the track. All of a sudden, the thing that people talk about who don't follow NASCAR, gee, it's a bunch of people making left turns, becomes something where the audience can be engaged. You know, that last wreck, was it the fault of driver X or driver Y? All kinds of things become possible. So I'm very excited about the sort of capabilities that a system like this makes possible.
Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid that we have reached the end of our hour. That's right. You've used up another hour listening to the best dang podcast in the universe. That's according to a live poll that we just took on livesift.com. I want to thank all of our panelists for being on the show today, for giving us a lot of information. Really, this was a lot of fun. This covering a technology that's a little bit different from what we normally cover on This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's always a lot of fun. Let me start with you, Chiebert. What are you up to? What should the Twilight Riot know about? Where should they be going?
Well, Keiichi in the chat room and I are going to be heading off to Las Vegas in not too terribly long, and we're going to be attending the American Library Association conference. And oh, by the way, shout out to Wen Spencer, who is going to be there in the Bain Books booth signing copies of her new book. And I'm very excited. I'm going to sit in a hotel room and try and knock out the next edition on our cloud computing series.
Yeah, you've been telling me that for a while. I want to see the book. Show me the money.
There you go. Now,
I also want to thank Curtis Franklin. Curtis, you've got some very interesting stuff coming up. What's going on over at Information Week Radio?
You know, we really do have some interesting stuff going on, and I'll let people know later on when we're going to air it. But for example, this coming Wednesday, I'm going to be sitting down with the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to talk about their use of social media and apps for all the different wildlife refuges. Basically, this is an agency that people think of as being only bears and fish, but they are really cutting edge in how they're using social media and big data to analyze the kind of engagement we've been talking about. So that's the sort of thing I get to do, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Curtis Franklin, InformationWeek.com. Also, special thanks to our guest, Mr. Alex Burgo from LiveSift. Alex, fantastic presentation. Could you please tell the folks where they can find more about LiveSift? And actually, you're still in beta, so is there a way for them to maybe play around with the service?
Sure. Yeah, just go to livesift.com and sign up. We have a limit to how many people can participate. That's more for our planning purposes. But yeah, if you want to get in contact with me, my email address is alex@livesift.com. Any questions, ideas, feedback, we'll take it all. Thank you so much for having us on. We're huge fans of this show. So,
oh, Alex, you just gave the internets your email, so God rest your soul.
That's fine. No, that's okay.
Actually, we'll have to have a poll on what happens with your email address. But no, again, thank you so very much for letting us play with this. We're going to have to play with this technology on Twit TV because this is, I think, right up our alley. So, again, thank Excellent. You for being on. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. I also want to thank you. That's right, our loyal watchers, listeners, our audience, the people who geek out with us each and every single week on some network technology. Now, we want to do something for you. And what we want to do is we want to make it easier for you to find This Week in Enterprise Tech by going to our show page at twit.tv/twit. There you'll find a little drop-down menu that will give you all the different options for getting this show delivered to your device of choice each week automatically. If you want it on your iPad, that's fine. Your iPhone, okay, we could do that. How about your laptop, your desktop, your Zoom, your Windows phone, whatever it may be, just select it and we'll make sure that we get you the version that you want. Maybe you want the audio version for the car. Maybe you want the video version for your mobile device. Maybe you want the high definition video because, well, you just can't get enough Twilight and you want it in all its high definition glory. Probably not, but hey, I'm sure there are some of you out there. Also, did you know that you can follow me on Twitter? Go to twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's @PadreSJ. If you follow me, not only will you find out what's going on each week on Twilight, but you'll find out what's going on in between all my shows on the Twit TV network. You can find me here 2:30 p.m. every Monday for This Week in Enterprise Tech. You'll find me on Thursdays at 11 o'clock for Know How and 1:30 for Coding 101, as well as Padres Corner, 7 o'clock p.m. every Friday. It's part of the things that I do because I love you and I just want to see more and more of you. Also, as long as you're going to drop in live, why not stop in our chat room? You see that we call out people from the chat room all the time. Why not be part of that group? You can find it at irc.twit.tv. If you want to watch us live, find us at live.twit.tv. Finally, I want to thank everyone that makes this show possible, to Carson, my super producer, Leo and Lisa, who are probably watching the U.S. play Ghana in the World Cup right now, and to my TD, who today is Anthony. Anthony, you probably don't have a camera on yourself, do you?
I do not.
You do not, but no. You can talk to us and just we'll hear your sultry voice so we know. Thank you for all the work that you do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. And folks, I'm Father Robert Ballester, just reminding you that if you want to know what's going on in the Enterprise, just keep quiet.